Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report, with Joseph Umar, Executive Director of Secure Free Society, and Ernesto Araújo, former Foreign Minister of the Republic of Brazil. We leave Japan, the end of the G7 meeting, and go to Bogota, the capital of Colombia. A puzzler. This is Reuters. Colombia's government suspended a national ceasefire with Estado Mayor Central, armed group in some provinces, following the murder of four indigenous teenagers. The move to reactivate military offensives against the EMC, Estado Mayor Central, in the country's southeast is the latest hiccup, that's Reuters' metaphor, in leftist Petro's efforts to make peace or surrender deals with armed groups to end Colombia's six-decade conflict, which has killed 450,000 people. Joseph, you're very familiar with this border region. You're very familiar with the violence in Colombia, which, from your reporting and from reading over these years, your guidance, is sponsored, vouchsafed, supported by Venezuela takes a piece of the action. Is that true for this EMC? I noticed in the southeast. Did you deal with this group at the time? What's happened? Petro was supposed to make peace with all of them immediately. He's one of them.
Yeah, he's definitely one of them. So the EMC, like, that's probably a new name for many people. It's Estado Mayor Central, but it's really just the FARC. The FARC, they have a bunch of dissident groups that basically dissented from the peace deal in 2016, and they were known mostly as FARC dissidents. But when the Biden administration delisted the FARC as a terrorist group, I think it was last year, they basically renamed themselves. And, you know, there's one called the EMC, which is the one we're talking about. There's another one called Segunda Marquetal, which operates more like on the northern part with the central, with the border with Venezuela. So this group, this particular faction of the FARC operates in the south of the country, very much involved in the drug trade, as you can imagine. And they basically re-engage in the fighting. But, you know, here's the thing. Like, what, there was a proposal by President Petro to create a ceasefire with four of the major narco-terrorist groups inside the country, the two factions of the FARC, the ELN, which is the big rebel group, and then the Clan del Golfo, which is the other big group that operates along the coast. The ceasefire is already done with the Clan del Golfo. That happened back in March. And now one faction of the FARC is eroding a ceasefire because of one main reason, John, because these groups never relinquish their illicit activity. They may lower the homicides for a certain time period, but they'll never relinquish the revenue sources for the illicit narcotics trade or human smuggling or human trafficking or other elements, gold smuggling and things like that. So that's what I think is really at the end of the day is taking place here, because it's hard to get a peace deal with a group when they dependent on criminal activities to be able to survive. That was the big problem with the 2016 peace deal. And that was why the demobilization and the reintegration of FARC into society was such a hard process, because, you know, now you took away the revenue. What are they going to do? How are they going to work? Where are they going to make money? And that's, I think that conversation is getting rehashed. But I'll add one last element, John. I actually think the violence increasing along the border areas of Colombia benefits Gustavo Petro. His domestic agenda is failing. He can't get his tax reform process. He can't get his pension reform process. He can't get many things passed. His coalition has already been dismantled inside the Colombian Congress. And so this kind of violence that's on the uptick on the borders of Colombia allows him to reestablish his narrative of peace. And I think the real goal of the peace process in Colombia is to legitimize the Maduro regime. He wants to then say we need to work with our neighbors in the East, the Venezuelans, to be able to deal with these border conflicts with these FARC rebels. And I think that that narrative is what he's trying to purport. So actually, this ceasefire, the breaking of the ceasefire with this faction, the FARC DMC, it actually could actually play out for him geopolitically in some instances.
I'm following very carefully Lula da Silva because he is the president of the second largest country in the Americas and an extremely prosperous country on the basis of its natural resources and its fertility. So, Ernesto, I'm always, always eager to hear about the relationship between Lula da Silva, who's been president forever. He was twice president at the beginning of the century, and now here he is in the third decade. Does he have a relationship with Petro? Petro is a much younger man. Petro would be the legacy of the center-left if he's successful. Does Brazil watch Colombia for what can be done, or are these different silos?
Well, no, they definitely are watching Colombia. You're right. Lula has been there for more than 20 years as a regional leader. Well, he was an original founder of the São Paulo Forum together with Fidel Castro in the early 90s. So he's a reference for everyone. So obviously he's a reference for Petro. And Petro, much less so for Lula. I think Lula didn't have the time for a lot of presidential diplomacy, fortunately for Brazil so far in Latin America because of domestic problems and because of his agenda with the U.S., China, and now the G7. Well, where he totally failed as well. But I think there's an effort on the part of Lula's people, together with Petro, together with Boric, together with Fernandez, to and together with AMLO, I think, to reorganize some sort of integration process around socialist or narco-socialist basis. I think they didn't have a lot of time yet. And at the same time, wearing the mask of climate consciousness, which Petro is doing and which Lula is trying to do as well. But with Colombia, we don't have the same sort of tradition, I think, of contacts that we have with Argentina, for example, because during a long time, Colombia was run by a center-right government and Brazil by Lula and his people. So The links are not the same. The quality of the links are not the same. But the project is very much there, and the similarities are very much there. I don't know if they sat down to discuss a joint strategy so far, but it is certainly in the air. So to consolidate Latin America as a region built around socialism, around crime dependency, and away from the United States, away from the democratic countries, but with the mask of what I call Greta Thunberg with the mask of a drug trafficker.
And Chinese checks.
Or vice versa. Yeah.
Joseph, Ecuador. Now we have a contest. This is Dateline Reuters, May 19th. Ecuadorian former President Rafael Correa told that his party would rebuild the country and tackle law and order issues if successful in a snap election called by President Guillermo Lasso. Elections could take place as early as August 20th. Lasso has been pursued by the legislature for impeachment, I believe, for corruption charges. And he dissolved the legislature and called a snap election. This looks like the heavyweights are out looking at each other, Joseph, after months of speculation about what was driving the upset in Ecuador. This would be one of those center-right countries that would fall to the pink tide. Who is Correa? What do we need to know about him, Joseph?
Oh, Rafael Correa, he's one of the most autocratic, radical presidents that Latin America has ever had, particularly in the 21st century. He's a complete copycat of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, a very close ally of Maduro, ally of Evo Morales in Bolivia. He's part of that original Bolivarian bloc of countries that took over the region during the Pink Tide in the early 2000s. He ruled pretty much with an iron fist from 2007 to 2017. The only reason he actually got removed was because he's indicted for criminal trial. I think he's actually convicted at this point of criminal actions. I had to double check that. But anyhow, Lenin Moreno, who used to be his vice president, took over when he had to leave the country. Then Mr. Guillermo Lasso became the president, I believe 2 years ago, when he was elected president of Ecuador. And so what happened recently was, he's been under assault pretty much from the beginning of his presidency, as usually happens. And this is kind of a point of the article I was making in National Interest as well. Most of the right-wing presidents in Latin America, they tend to rely on state institutions. But the left-wing presidents in Latin America, they rely on popular power, meaning they go to the streets. And in that, they've always been able to harass their successors, especially if they're right of center. And that's no different in the case of Ecuador. So Mr. Correa's basically his political coalition, his grassroots, is all his elements that he has that remain powerful inside the country have been attacking Guillermo Lasso since day one. They tried to impeach him before. They failed. Now they're trumping up corruption charges. And so basically, he was about to get impeached by the Congress because they got the votes, and he gave a speech at the Congress. He didn't have the votes necessary to impede that, so he used what's called Article 148 of their Constitution, which allows him to close the National Assembly if he thinks there's a political crisis in the country. He did that, but that automatically invokes a snap election, which I think will take place in August. I can't remember the exact date, but this could put Ecuador, a country that's already in a lot of turmoil, into even more turmoil between now and then. And the worst of it, John, is that this could actually bring back not Mr. Correa himself, but a proxy of Rafael Correa back into power inside the country. Kind of similar to what happened in Bolivia between 2019 and 2020 when Evo Morales left. They had an interim president, and then that president left, and now the MAS is back in power in Bolivia. A little bit different because we're not talking about interim president. We're talking about democratically elected President Guillermo Lasso, but he's been weakened systematically over the last couple of years, and he's going to turn out only serving two of his four-year term because of this instability.
Joseph, a detail. Correa was sentenced to years in jail, and he's sought refuge in Europe, I believe. He's been hiding in Europe. Doesn't that signify to the Ecuadorian voter something about Correa's push?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's not very popular himself. And so this is not really like a Rafael Correa versus Guillermo Lasso, but Rafael Correa is very savvy, is at building corrupt coalitions inside the country. So he's used other governors, he's used other members of the Congress, he's used grassroots street movements, the indigenous community or parts of the indigenous community. He was in power for 10 years. So in those 10 years, he built a very powerful and robust non-state network that allows him to persist in power, even though he's no longer the president. And I think it is well known that Rafael Correa is pulling the strings from behind the scenes inside Ecuador. He's the one that's making sure Guillermo Lasso cannot serve his four-year term as the duly elected president of Ecuador. That doesn't mean that Rafael Correa's popularity is on the rise, or does it mean that he's going to come back to become president? Well, I should never say never, but it does mean that he's been the main political actor in charge of making sure that Guillermo Lasso doesn't finish his presidency. Now, I'm very curious to see who are going to be the presidential contenders for the snap election in August. And, as we were talking a little while ago about this rightward shift in the region with, starting with Paraguay, it's already happened, potentially in Guatemala, maybe in Argentina. But this could be a disruptor. This could actually disrupt that, especially if the radical left comes back to power in Ecuador.
Joseph Umar, Executive Director of Secure Free Society. Ernesto Araújo, former Foreign Minister of the Republic of Brazil. We're headed to Havana, Cuba. The appearance of Russian officials. What does it mean for the rest of the Americas? This is CBS Eye on the World, New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.